we get stuck in a story and in a narrative, and we can end up wearing some sort of corporate victim t-shirt. You know, I'm powerless, I'm passive, it's all about them, blame someone else. And again, a lot of my material is about taking ownership and being empowered. But I think some people was like quite look like being stuck in that drama narrative and poor me narrative. And so they ask for advice, but deep down they don't always want it.
You're listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent, for real estate industry sales professionals, property managers, and leaders. With thanks to our partner, Connect Now, Elevate brings you the best tools, thinking, and strategies to elevate your results. For more information about how Connect Now can make moving easier for your clients, visit connectnow.com.au. And to get new episodes of Elevate directly to your inbox, sign up at eliteagent.com/subscribe. Here is your host, Samantha McLean.
Hey, everyone, it's Sam here. Today, we're in for a real treat as we dive into the world of change, resilience, and leadership. Our guest today is known to many of you in the real estate industry. It's Paul McGee, affectionately known as the Sumo Guy. Paul is a best-selling author of 11 books, including the internationally acclaimed Sumo, which has been translated now into 10 languages. He's not just a writer, though. Paul shared his wisdom in over 40 countries, and we're lucky enough to have him present to us at Elite Retreat this year. So all the way from the UK, welcome to the show, Paul McGee.
Sam, it's great to be with you. I'd love to say all the way from the sunny UK, but it's a typical British summer. It's cold and it's wet and it's windy, which is why I can't wait to be in Australia.
Well, 23 degrees centigrade on Hayman Island, as I understand right now, and nice for swimming. So, like, you're coming back to Australia. How exciting.
Oh, absolutely. I first came out in 2008 when I actually spoke at ARIC. So my whole sort of like introduction to working in Australia was actually in the real estate industry. And probably one of the things I'll talk about on the Hayman Island at the Elite Retreat is the day I met Stephen Covey, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People author. That was a very memorable conversation.
Yeah. Well, I can't wait to hear some of your stories. And I mean, just to let the audience know is how we connect. Well, we've connected a few times, Zoomathon a while ago through none other than the incomparable Master Rick Rushton.
Absolutely.
But we've been talking about this for a while. And when you were quite excited when I said the theme is genius moves. And so, you know, like I've defined genius moves for everyone, but what do you feel a genius move is?
Well, the reason why I was excited, Sam, is I've spoken at over 2,000 events. And as you say, in over 40 countries. And I'd never, ever come across that theme before. And so I thought it was a genius move to come up with that as a theme, was a genius move. But I guess for me, a genius move is something that is a bit of a game changer for you, whether that's in terms of your business or your life, how you see the world. It's a bit of a game changer. And I don't think necessarily genius, because when you think of genius, you might think of Albert Einstein and people who are incredibly intellectual. But I think sometimes wisdom is hiding in plain sight. And sometimes it's the simple stuff that when you realize you do it and you implement it and you go, that was genius. But it doesn't mean it was complex and hard necessarily. Sometimes genius is wrapped up in the package of simplicity. And I think we ignore it sometimes because we think, oh, that sounds too simple. It's like it's going to be really hard and struggle. Sometimes it is, but sometimes it's simple stuff that makes a huge difference.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, this is what we tell people in the sales pitch to come to Elite Retreat, is that you can't read the label when you're inside the jar.
Love it. I'm stealing that one.
I've been, well, it's okay. It's about time I gave one away because I've been stealing them all day. So we're talking about genius moves that we've made and genius moves that we didn't make because, and often, you know, like we learn a lot from the genius, you know, the move that we didn't make, the move that we look back on and think, gosh, that was a really big mistake not doing that. So I just want to ask you from the audience and the audience who know you very well, what is one genius move that you did make that you're really proud of? And what's one genius move that you missed but wish you'd made?
Okay. I think the genius move that I did make was around my branding, if I'm honest. I'm in a competitive world, particularly in the UK, and I know it happens in Australia, where in the speaking industry, It helps if you're a celebrity, I think. And I haven't got what I call the safety net of celebrity. And so it's like, how do you distinguish yourself in this crowded marketplace where everyone is seduced by celebrity? And sometimes people are great in their sector and they've climbed Everest and they've won gold medals. And some of those people are great speakers as well. Some aren't. But no worries, because you can always have your photo with them with the gold medal. For me, it's like, who is this complete unknown? Which I was. And I think I stumbled across this phrase, sumo, shut up, move on. It's evolved, it developed. And I'll talk about on Hayman Island, I'll talk about the genius of grit, because my best-selling book, which has sold 250,000 copies, Sumo, was rejected by 13 different publishers. And I suppose one of my genius moves was not the fact that I wasn't prepared to quit, but was the fact that I was prepared to ask people I trusted for their opinion and advice. And they encouraged me to carry on persisting and push more doors, and the rest is history. I think the genius move that I kind of missed, but I kind of resolved that now, is embracing social media sooner than I did. I think Instagram was launched in 2010. I didn't open an account till 2016. So I've been late to the party on social media, but I think I'm making the most of it now. But that was something, as I would say, I kind of missed, and I didn't do anything in lockdown. And I think a lot of people who embrace social media in lockdown, particularly on TikTok, ended up absolutely going viral and huge in terms of their profile and their influence. And I kind of didn't really take that opportunity.
Okay, so you've written 11 books, I think. And I thought for a bit of fun today, we might do a little whistle stop through some of your books, because there's some great advice in there. Actually, I was sort of hoping that you might bring a couple with you signed, you know, because we've got that charity auction.
Oh, don't worry. I'm on it.
So starting with Sumo, which is obviously everyone's favorite, and I know that there's a lot of copies on Real Estate Agents of Sumo, which of course is Shut Up, Move On. And by the way, can I just say, I love how to the point your titles are. It's not like looking at a recipe online, like we're very clear on, you know, what we're going to get. So the Straight Talking Guide to Succeeding in Life. So these are just little rapid fire questions about each book. So I'm going to test your memory as much as
mine. Okay, you are. I'm very impressed.
Okay, one tip. Like, let's just say you're feeling stuck in your life at the moment. What's one tip to get over feeling stuck?
One tip is just to be aware of this formula, which underpins all my work. E plus R equals O. It's the event plus how I respond that influences the outcome. And sometimes you go, well, I'm feeling stuck. Well, no offense, just because you feel something, get on and do it anyway. I think people can get so wrapped up in their head or they're waiting to feel motivated. Sometimes literally, I think under your breath, and it's a sumo here, and it's a shut up and move on. And it's never just the event. It's how we respond that influences our outcomes.
Yeah, good answer. Because action, you know, it's almost the remedy for pretty much everything. Well, except crossing the road when there's traffic. But
it is. We sometimes think, well, I'll take action when I'm motivated. And I just use this phrase, right feelings follow right actions.
Yeah. Okay, so the next one that I want to talk about is self-confidence, and this is one that's close to everyone's heart, the remarkable truth of why a small change can make a big difference. So what is one misconception you think about self-confidence that this book aims to clear up?
I think people think that either you're born confident or you're not. And one of the things that I talk about in the book is that confidence is situational. So I was just talking to my wife yesterday, who's an amazing, and you'll meet her on Hayman Island, she's going to be with me. She's an amazing multitasker. She's very practical. But if you asked her to go on stage to speak, even just for a minute, she would say, I'd have a meltdown. And I think sometimes we think that people are either confident or they're not. And yet, if you see my wife in the kitchen cooking, she is super confident. And if you see me cooking in the kitchen, we've got a big problem. But see me on stage, I'm like, the more the merrier. If someone said, how would you feel about addressing a crowd of 100,000 people? I'm going, as long as they can see me and they can hear me, let's do this. So confidence is not across all areas of our lives. Confidence is situational and we can develop it. It's not a question of either you got it or you haven't.
Someone very wise once said to me, actually, don't wait till you're confident to show up. Show up until you're confident. And it's true, you know, like you've just got to keep doing something until you're never confident in the beginning.
We get hijacked by anxiety, and our brains tell us that the best way to avoid anxiety is to avoid doing the thing. But as you rightly say, sometimes it's facing that fear, it's facing that discomfort, and actually in facing it and then addressing it, your confidence comes and your anxiety is reduced.
Yeah. What about, like, let's just picture I'm a real estate agent. Let's just say I'm Ryan Serhant because he's all over Netflix at the moment. And I'm about to enter a negotiation for a $15 million penthouse. Actually, I think it's $150 million, his penthouse, but I'm about to go into that negotiation. I don't know if Ryan Serhant ever feels nervous, but what are some things that you can do to maybe boost your confidence if you're going into a high stakes negotiation or a situation that is making you nervous?
I mean, I obviously am not in real estate, so my equivalent is actually speaking at a large event. And I've hosted an event with British prime ministers who are going to be speaking at it. And one of the things that helps me have confidence is to go, I'm there to serve my audience. So if you're trying to enter into a negotiation, if you can have one, you have to just be all over it in terms of preparation. And if your attitude is not, I just want to get the best deal for me, but I want to get the best deal for us, then your attitude changes and it's less pressure on you. It's not a kind of one of us has to win, one of us has to lose, and the pressure is on me to win. It's how do I serve this person? How do I serve this audience and make sure I've prepared? And I'll tell you, Sam, in every situation I'm in, and I've worked with some British prime ministers, and you can get rather intimidated. But all I was doing was introducing them at this charity event. And I thought, I'm here to serve my audience. It's not about me. It's about a win-win for everybody. So preparation and having an attitude of win-win, I think you can actually see, not the nerves completely dissipate, but as someone once said, you can all feel butterflies in our stomach, but you can teach them to fly in formation.
Oh, I like that. Maybe I'll steal that one from you today.
Okay. That's one all. That's one all. Stealing the quotes.
Rightio. Next book. Okay. How to Succeed with People. Remarkably easy ways to engage, influence, and motivate almost anyone. So let's just say here's a situation is, you know, managing teams, I think, is one of the hardest things leaders in the real estate industry do, or leaders in any small business do. What's one thing, like, let's just say you've got a team member who's going through a bit of a rough time and you want to influence them to sort of pick themselves up and sumo, if you like. What's one tip in your toolkit I can use as a leader?
I think it is this whole thing of sometimes give people a good listening to. There isn't a one-size-fits-all approach to how we deal with people. We're all unique. I mean, we talk about diversity, neurodiversity. You can look the same, but people can be wired and think very, very differently. So I would say as leaders, it's about treating the person as an individual. And it actually is about saying, look, we need to have a one-to-one and do as meant, but ask questions and then really, really listen rather than what's the motivational phrase or talk I need to give Paul to get the best out of this person. The honest answer is we don't necessarily know. Find out what's going on in their world, what's important to them, how you can support them and take it from there.
Yeah, I think that's great advice because sometimes, I mean, even for me, like someone comes along and gives me a motivational speech at the wrong time and I could be a bit like a funnel web spider. I could make it worse. Like, yeah. I don't know, do you have funnel web spiders in the UK? They're like...
No, we don't. We just have wind and rain all year round. That keeps us going.
That's scary. Scary. No, but I think that's excellent advice about listening to the individual. Well, this is actually not my favorite book title. That's coming. But the next one is How Not to Worry, The Remarkable Truth of How a Small Change Can Help You Stress Less and Enjoy Life More. So what do you think? Because we all worry. And for me, I worry that people think I say too much or that I'm starting to look a bit old or, you know, like all of the human things that go on in your head. But somebody wise said to me once that the reality is people don't think about you anywhere near as much as what you think about you. And so that was a bit of a reality check. Okay, fine. But worry can be pretty unproductive. So what's one example of a technique from the book that might help a real estate agent not worry so much, particularly when it comes to things like market volatility and stuff like that?
One of the things to think about, and actually in the book, How Not to Worry, I actually tell a story about being in Australia and how when I'm in Australia, I constantly hear the phrase, no worries. I won't do the accent, but well, maybe I will. No worries, Mike. No worries, Mike. And one thing I talk about in the book is actually there are two types of worry. Now, no one has ever come up with this as an idea, as far as I'm aware, but there are two types of worry. And there is what I call worth it worry and worthless worry. And so worth it worry is you might be concerned about something, like getting to an appointment on time and you've heard the traffic is bad. And it's like, well, I'm just saying, well, no worries. Look, you may actually be late and you don't want to be late for something, or you've got a big presentation and someone goes, oh, don't worry, it'll be fine. No, prepare. That initial worry, which actually you could label more a bit of anxiety, actually stimulates your desire to go. It's a catalyst to going, I need to take action here. I need to leave early. I need to prepare. That's what I call worth it worry. It's in what I call, or maybe talk about on Hayman Island, your circle of influence or your circle of control. Worthless worry is when you keep on worrying about the market, worrying about things that are not in your control. So again, another specific example I give that's just generic. You know, I'll be flying out to Australia, really looking forward to it. If I'm concerned again about the traffic, that worry is worth it. Give yourself plenty of time to get to the airport. If you're then on the plane and there's turbulence and you're saying to yourself, oh my days, what's going to happen? Well, not a lot you could do about the turbulence, Paul. That is worthless worry. So sometimes I actually say to myself, is this anxiety? Is this release of cortisol and adrenaline actually a wake-up call to say, no, it's fine to be a little bit worried here because you need to do something to take some action? Or is it completely worthless? And that itself has really helped me focus on what you can do and let go of the stuff that you can't. It sounds easier to say than to do, but it's something that is helping me a great deal. And I'll be sharing a little insight about that in August.
I love that. Great tip. Okay, here is my favorite title. Sumo Your Relationships, How to Handle, Not Strangle, the People That You Live and Work With. Now, if anyone's listening, Mark and I are fine. So this one's about managing effective personal and professional relationships. So what are some signs that a professional relationship needs the sumo approach, and how would you recommend addressing it?
I'll go back to that formula E plus R equals O. And I think you know when things aren't going well, when the outcome, the O, we're just not getting the outcome. We're just not getting the connection that we need. And again, to quote Covey, begin with the end in mind. And what I've just learned in life generally is that you can't always control. In fact, you can't control. You're not responsible for other people's behavior. The only person's behavior you're responsible for is your own. And I think one of the things I talk about in that book, and also I did another version of that called How to Succeed with People, is people can't be fixed. They can't necessarily be changed. And sometimes you just have to accept, no matter how good your toolkit is and how many courses you've been on and books you've read and podcasts you've listened to, sometimes there is no magic formula. However, keep on thinking, begin with the end in mind, what's the outcome I want in this relationship? And keep on thinking about how you respond, whether that's listening or sometimes being prepared to challenge people. But it's all about looking at how what you need to do rather than going, how do I change them? There is loads of strategies in that book on how to succeed with people. But I think it's just about recognizing, as I said before, one size fits all approach doesn't work. And people go, guaranteed way to turn anyone around to your way of thinking. It's rubbish. It's baloney. You're only responsible for your behavior, not anyone else's.
I wish someone had given me that advice in my younger days when I was dating, because sumo would have been such a great thing not wasted so much time on things that were never, you know, like a classic question to people sometimes when they say, oh, but you know, they're this and they're that and the situation's this and that and da 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 goes on and on and on. It's like, is there any new information coming? No, then you need to move on.
We get stuck in a story and in a narrative, and we can end up wearing some sort of call a victim t-shirt. You know, I'm powerless, I'm passive, it's all about them, blame someone else. And again, a lot of my material is about taking ownership and being empowered. But I think some people was like quite look like being stuck in that drama narrative and poor me narrative. And so they ask for advice, but deep down they don't always want it.
Yeah, that's such a great point too. I love that. All right, one final book. And I love this one for real estate agents as well. So How to Speak So People Really Listen, The Straight Talking Guide to Communicating with Influence and Impact. And I think this is one thing that every agent would like, or every salesperson would like, is to become a more effective and persuasive communicator. But what are some of the key elements? And I mean, you've spoken on all the stages and all the rest of it. What are some of the key elements that you think make communication really impactful, especially if you're in a sales career?
Okay. I think one of the things to keep thinking about is avoid drowning people in detail. So this is breaking news. I was officially diagnosed yesterday with a deformed foot. And I was talking to one of the top surgeons in the UK about it. And he just, lovely guy, but boy, did he drown me in detail about 101 things I didn't need to know. And so one, I'm a great believer in slim your communication, S-L-I-M, say less, impact more. That doesn't mean say little, but say less, impact more, rather than drown people in detail. And again, I go back to the point I mentioned before. When you do some listening and you ask questions, you find out what's important to the buyer rather than what's important to you. I think another thing is images increase impact. 95% of the population think in pictures. We think in images. And I think when you're looking at a home or a property, you're not just wanting to put all the text. Clearly, you show images. But again, maybe when you're showing someone around an apartment or a home, it's about saying, oh, so what would you see yourself doing in this room? Or what would this be? Or how do you think you might change the garden? And you are creating images in people's minds. And I think sometimes also just in general communication, and I'll be doing that at the Elite Retreat, it's about telling stories. You know, facts tell, but stories sell. And there's a thing about storytelling that is really powerful. So slim your communication. It's not about how much can I cram detail and content into your head here, because you're not going to retain it. And images increase impact. So either by showing people physically something, showing them an actual picture, or getting them to imagine in their minds some future outcome, that is very, very powerful.
Yeah, I love that, actually. That's something I think about copywriting all the time. Like, even for the Elite Retreat brochure, it's sort of thinking about, imagine yourself on Hayman Island with the sumo guy, Paul McGee.
Yeah, and the thing, if I interject with a very, very brief story, without going into too much detail. So in 2008, I was contacted about coming out to speak at the big real estate event. We've got Stephen Covey. And the thing that they were basically going to get around to was, we've spent virtually all our budget, speaker budget, on Stephen Covey, so we can't exactly pay you a lot. But rather than hit me with that straight away, they went, yeah, so imagine you're going to be on the stage with Stephen Covey. In fact, where we'd see you on the agenda is that he'll open day two of the conference, and then he'll walk off and you'll be following him. And at some stage, they even said, so on the conference brochure, we'll actually have a picture of him followed by a picture of you. And I'm like, thinking about the profile and the credibility of being associated with this guru. And then later on, they said, look, the budget maybe for you speaking isn't as high as you'd maybe expect. But because they'd already got me imagining and visualizing working with Stephen Covey, that had touched into another really important emotion for me, which was about, yes, some kind of recognition and association in terms of credibility with Covey. So, you know, like you say, imagine. It's a powerful word when you use that word, imagine.
Yeah, and I think that this really sort of goes back to what you said about listening, because I guess it's an assumption that as a speaker, you'd really want to work with someone like Stephen Covey. But as a real estate agent, you really need to listen to what the person's motivation for moving, let's say, is, to be able to tap into that. So I think there's so many gold nuggets in all of your books. It's amazing. So we are lucky to have you. So I want to thank you for joining me on the podcast. You are from the UK, but basically you're a national treasure here. So we can't wait to have you at Elite Retreat Hayman Island. And I'm sure that there's a bunch of people that are looking forward to catching up with you. So I just wanted to thank you for well, firstly, for coming to Australia and for joining me on the podcast, because it's pretty special when we get to talk to you. If there was one thing that you'd like to leave everyone with before Haman, what would that be?
I think one of the things, I suppose, we can be looking forward to an event like this. Exactly. But there's a friend of mine called Drew who uses this phrase, because sumo in Latin means choose. And my friend Drew says this, and I know Rick uses it as well, Rick Rushton. Every day is a choose day. C-H-O-O-S-E. I woke up this morning. It's so-called our summer. It's grey. There's not a sign of the sun. And I'm thinking, am I just going to say, well, I'm just going to write off this day? Or am I going to wake up and go, I'm going to choose to get out. I'm going to read. I'm going to walk out in nature. I'm going to give my very best to today. And of course, I'm so looking forward to Australia. I'm anticipating it. I can't wait. And so many people to catch up with and the beauty of where the location for this conference will be. But I'm not going to postpone my happiness until August the 11th. I'm going to go, okay, I can choose today to savor today and make the most of it. So whatever's going on in your world today, you know, you can make some brilliant choices today that can impact you, maybe your quality of life and the life of those around you. Every day is a choose day.
I love it. Paul McGee, thank you so much.
My absolute pleasure, Sam. See you soon.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Elevate Podcast with thanks to Connect Now. To stay in touch with all things Elite Agent, sign up for our daily newsletter, The Brief, at eliteagent.com/subscribe.